Welcome to the Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. On this week's show, we are going to recap Submission Arena Grappling Competition 7. We are going to recap Fight to Win 91. We're going to talk a little about the World Series of Jiu-Jitsu, the ADCC First North American Trials, Spider Korea Finals, and Fight to Win 92. As always, I'm Maine, joined here with my co-host,
Emil.
How you doing, Emil?
I'm doing great, man. This was an awesome weekend.
This is a pretty exciting weekend for us. So, in case you guys didn't catch it, we did commentary for SAGC7 up in PA. I always want to say Philly, even though it's in the same state.
Yeah, we drove past Philly.
In Hatboro, PA.
Yeah.
At Paper Street BJJ.
Which, by the way, Maine recognized because he had worked there in the sewers at one point.
Yep. I had worked about, I want to say, what do you think, a quarter mile away, half mile away from where the event was before, probably like 4 years ago.
Something like that. But it's just hilarious to think about you recognizing the entire Eastern Seaboard just by where the sewer lines and manhole covers are in a given town.
It was kind of creepy. I was like, why do I recognize this Sonic and this gas station? Okay, oh, I've been here before. Oh, we're here. Why do I recognize this? And then I pointed to a place that I had had lunch before. And yeah. Not the non-sequitur at all. So it was great. We're going to talk about that in more detail. But before we do that, a little bit of news. What do we got for news, Emil?
Yeah, big news. Eddie Cummings is entering his first competition under the Unity banner. So this is at Fight to Win 94.
Yeah, he's competing for the 155-pound Masters title, which I think, I want to say he was the 145 champion. I have a list up I should look at before I just spout off the top of my head. I want to say he was the 145-pound champion, so it'd be interesting to see him going up in weight and going into the Masters division. We haven't seen him compete in
a little bit, but he looks like he has put on muscle.
He definitely looks like he was wiry at 45. Did he compete at 35?
I think he has.
Was that the GO one, or was that the GO one at 45?
I think he did go down, and it might have been for
EBI.
EBI, but yeah, that's right. It was EBI.
Okay, yep. It was either, I want to say he was going to go to the 40. I know, those guys have gone back and forth before at 35 and 45. I think Gio got down to 35, but now he's 55. He looks way less sucked out in recent pictures.
He looks pretty ripped, yeah.
Yeah, and all the Unity guys are super ripped. They've got a real legit strength conditioning program over there. Again, I assume he had one under Henzo's as well, but, you know, it'll be the first time we've seen him compete in, I cannot recall the last time I've seen him.
Yeah, it's been
either?
A hot minute.
It's been more than a year. I don't think we've ever covered him on the show.
He had because he had a knee injury that he was rehabbing for a little bit.
Yeah, for a while, actually.
And then it sounds like he was trying to figure out what his next move was training-wise.
Yeah, and he's made that move now.
Yep. And so here we go. It'll be exciting to see him back on the mats.
In other news, I mean, you might not know this. This is the year anniversary of the podcast, I think.
Oh, shoot. Awesome, man.
Yep. We've now been doing this show for 1 year.
Awesome.
I have nothing else planned other than that. I literally forgot until I looked at the date. I was like, oh, yeah, the next month is going to be the one-year anniversary of the show. I was like, why are we only on 51? It's like, oh, yeah, Christmas last year was weird, and we didn't do a show.
Yeah, man, happy anniversary.
You're here, too, man.
Yeah.
You've done a bunch of these shows.
Yeah.
You've figured out the format at this point. So what other news you got, Emil?
That's it.
So on to our recap of SAGC7. Emil and I did commentary for this event. We're going to get into that and our whole experience with the event at the end, but before that, we are going to get into the recaps of the matches. Do you want to start at the title matches, or do you want to start at the lower card?
Why don't we start with the rule set first, because this is a pretty exotic rule set.
Oh, yeah, let's
do
that
first. We
haven't
seen it. And basically, what we have is there are some traditional matches on here, which are 10 minutes.
Pretty much standard super fight matches. You have a 10-minute match with no overtime. It's either a submission or it's a draw. SAGC doesn't do points.
Right.
So all of these matches are submission or draw. For the traditional matches, you can only have those two outcomes after 10 minutes.
Then the other kind of match is the endurance match. And this is their kind of bread and butter and their unique flavor to jiu-jitsu, where it's 3 5-minute rounds. Each round, you can get a submission, which will get you a match point, essentially.
Yep.
And then the best out of 3 match points wins. So,
yeah, so if you go 3 rounds, if person A subs person the first round, person B subs the second round, both have 1 point going into the third round. Now, if that third round is a draw, somebody wins the third round, they win the match. If that third round is a draw, they go into an unlimited time, no time limit till sub round.
Right. And so this is interesting because the submission doesn't automatically end the match.
It ends the round.
But not the match.
Good luck, sir.
Exactly.
If you were Hail Marying on something and you happen to get it, because you got to do it again now.
Now, this is an interesting format. Maine and I, to tell you the truth, were a little bit skeptical about this, but the more we watched it, the more we appreciated
it. And here's why we were skeptical. We've seen, there's a couple other tournaments we've seen do this. Notably, ACBJJ does this, and we've seen some really, really slow matches from that. We've also seen this in, what's that $50,000 tournament? WSOG, we've seen that in there as well.
Right.
For the finals, they do this when you see some pushing matches. There's none of that.
There's also the Black Belt CBD did the three.
Yeah, they did that as well. Those were good. But again, we've seen it work when we've seen it be slow.
Right.
But man, the matchmaking on this card made every single match exciting. I mean, because Emil and I were going to watch all of these live because we were doing the commentary for it. So we were prepared to be there a long, long time. We were not.
So Joe from SAGC just did a superb job at matchmaking here, where all of the competitors were really coming in hot, like going for those submissions.
Yeah, they got that you are here to showcase jiu-jitsu, put on a good show, and go for the sub.
And
you're not here to push a dude and play it so you can go to the third round so maybe you can call a sub there. No, you're trying to sub quick and sub fast so you can get to the next match. It was awesome. Like, we had a couple matches. I think we had two total go to overtime of all the endurance matches.
And
then of the other endurance matches, we had a couple that were finished in 2 minutes total,
yeah,
both rounds.
The submissions.
You had the same competitor sub both rounds in a row.
Exactly. The submissions came quick. And of the overtime matches, only one of them didn't have a submission in regulation time. And that was the last title match.
It was a title fight.
And that was awesome.
Between Andrew Cockle and Mateus Lutz. Like, if any match is going to go long, happy is that match.
Exactly. So the other nice thing about this rule set is that a surprise submission won't determine the result of the match. And you have people taking way bigger risks as a result of that.
Yeah, I like that. Because if you get tapped, again, no one wants to be I don't want to say that anyone's going to be too aggressive. But if you get tapped once, if you're trying something like, hey, this might work against this guy, guys are willing to try for it because you have another shot at the guy, especially in the first round. Like, guys are willing to throw up some stuff that maybe you wouldn't see in a more conservative rule set because the other guy's got to get you twice.
Right.
And so if you can go for a Hail Mary or something that's like, you know, I like this sub, but it's kind of risky, let me try it. You see guys throwing that in this rule set because they have another shot at their opponent if they happen to get subbed.
Another testament to the event and the matchmaking was, despite submissions being the only way to win matches, we still saw a lot of takedowns. We didn't see that. I mean, there was definitely a few.
I think
cases.
That's partially, that's a competitor thing as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
The guys that they had on this event were ready to go, ready to win, and trying to impose their jiu-jitsu. No one was just trying to, like, play that push game for 5 minutes till the round end, or, like, for 4 minutes and then maybe sit at the fourth minute because, you know, guys were here to go. It was really nice to see. And we had an awesome seat at that little table in the corner there.
Some of the most entertaining jiu-jitsu that I've seen live, hands down. So can't wait to tell you guys about this.
So let's start it off, Neil. Where do you want to start with this card?
Let's start with the first of the title matches.
Okay, yeah, we had three title matches on this card. They're in the endurance format, so those 3 5-minute rounds with the person with the two submissions or more, or one submission potentially, getting the match.
So the first title match was Sam McCallie versus Brandon Medina.
Oh, interesting fill-in here. So Sam was originally scheduled to fight Christian Medina, Brandon's twin brother. He had to pull out, so Brandon was able to step in and take the match.
Which is kind of the perfect fill-in, right? Like,
it's like your twin brother's gonna come in and fill your space. Like, that's kind
of
cool.
That's out of a movie, man.
Yeah, it is out of a movie.
So that was an awesome match. We got to talk to Sam for a while afterwards too, and he trains out of upstate New York and Syracuse, and occasionally comes down to Hanzo's
to
train.
He had a big drive down to this event, so it was really cool to see him on this card.
And so Sam wins the first match by cloverleaf. And the entire time,
Texas cloverleaf, by the way, that is basically, if you're not familiar with that submission, it is basically a shin crank from like the Texas cloverleaf position. In hindsight, I don't actually have a better way to describe this on the audio. If you're curious what this is, look up Texas cloverleaf. It's basically, if you're in the outside leg position in like a 50-50, you have your opponent's legs crossed over each other, and you're pulling at the bottom leg to put their own shin into their calf, and he finishes with this. I love this submission.
This submission was great, and Sam looked calm and collected the entire time. He was dominating quite a bit, and he did a great job at being versatile with his submission attempts, not just focusing on the legs And we talked about this a lot towards the end, but basically, even though he's very proficient with leg attacks, you know, especially training with those Henzo guys,
doesn't want to ignore the upper body,
right?
Which I appreciate. I appreciate guys that will, when given a dominant position, they will fight for a dominant position, but they also have the leg attacks in their back pocket. So that was a really nice. This is a really nice match to look at that. A guy that can do both.
And Sam in the second round also wins by inside heel hook, and so he at this point accumulates 2 match points and wins. There's no third match.
Yep. So on to the next match. We had Zach Edwards versus Savion Marinon. I kept messing up his name, and so I apologize.
Yeah, this match was incredible. Zach Edwards training out of 10th Planet, right? Bethlehem?
Yep, 10th Planet Bethlehem.
Man, those guys were great.
Yeah, they're super friendly. We talked to them as well.
They sent up 5 competitors to this event, and 4 out of them won their matches. So they did that.
And we've seen Zach. We see Zach pretty frequently. We've seen him on Onnit. He has the fastest submission on Onnit for Onnit 9, I think. And he was on Olympus Invitational. He was also on. I mean, we've covered him a couple times, so it was cool to see him live. Dude is way taller and bigger than I thought he was.
Absolutely, yeah. He's definitely got
it's like
that,
what 6'3" or something.
6'3", and then also has that ridiculous leg dexterity that the 10th Planet guys showcase all the time.
Dude, he used that a ton in this match. He would re-guard and get under Marinon in places where I did not think it was possible. He also does something really interesting. I'm not sure what round it was in this match, but he was in bottom side control, and he was lifting his far side leg around Marinon's back and grabbing it with his own hand in an attempt to like almost come around the back or like re-guard. It was a really, really cool thing you don't see a whole lot. Guys that are long and lanky like that are just a nightmare to grapple against, especially if they're as flexible as a guy like Edwards is.
It looked almost like a rubber guard kind of setup, but from bottom side. And his opponent, Savion, was incredible. And even more impressive, we found out after the fact that he was 16, I think they said.
That's what you said.
Yeah.
I do not believe that, but holy shit. If that dude is 16, that's again, Zach's only 25.
Yeah.
But still, dude, it's like, oh, I have aged out of high-level competitive jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And I think this event, I've known it for a while, but this event really showed it. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm just not 20 anymore. I'm just not 25 anymore. Like, oh, shit, these guys are doing stuff that I just can't do.
And Savion had some really, really, really energetic attacks, really aggressive guard passing and things like that, and definitely forcing Zach to use that re-guarding that we were talking about.
Oh, yeah, and to be flexible and get up underneath him. So, again, it was really fun. The submissions were fun in this one as well.
So the first round, Zach wins by heel hook, and he's just doing excellent leg attacks the entire time. He's having to keep Savion, you know, on his toes quite a bit. Can't overcommit to things lest he be kind of thrown over and have his legs attacked, which ultimately he did.
Right.
Zach was able to get the submission there and wins the first match, or the first round.
The first round of the potentially 3-round title bout.
So the second round is a draw. Neither side gets a submission. And the third round, Zach wins by inside heel hook.
Again, same submission. A little different setup on the submission, but same submission. So Zach Edwards, now the champion at 170 for SAGC. So on to the final match, the final match of the evening, the final of the title fights. So I'm going to go back through the prelims and the undercard and talk about those matches as well. We had Andrew Cockle versus Mateus Lutz.
And just to clarify, we've talked about Andrew Cockle before. We were mispronouncing his name as Koschel, but it's Andrew Cockle. And
I think I still fucked it up on the broadcast.
I think we corrected ourselves pretty well, but Mateus Lutz being a absolutely dominant.
Dude got third in the Worlds this year.
Oh,
like,
man.
At brown belt. Like, both these dudes are standout brown belts. Lutz trains with Marcelo Garcia. We talked to him at length after the match, and we'll get into that after we've recapped the event. But, man, he had a standout performance here against a guy like Andrew.
Yeah, Andrew, we knew, you know, we posted his finishing sequence from Finisher Sub Only. He's incredibly talented. Lutz is just imposing, though. On the feet, he must have done, or at least attempted, maybe a half dozen different kinds of takedown attempts.
Yeah, really dynamic takedown entries and takedown attempts. We saw him do scissor takedowns, we saw him do single legs, we saw him do double legs, like
foot sweeps, outside
downs,
leg trips, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
He looked confident and comfortable with every single one.
Yeah.
Very
also,
dangerous.
His legs are gigantic.
Yeah, no.
He's built like Marcelo.
His way bigger. His thighs were the size
bigger
of my torso, man. There were some points where he had triangles on Koschel, or Cockle, I should say, and It just looked like, you know, an anaconda crushing prey. It looked terrible, uncomfortable to be in.
Yeah, but props to Andrew. He was able to get out of a lot of them.
Yeah, so this was a battle back and forth. Yeah. So first round, 0-0. Neither side gets a submission.
We see a lot of really, really nice guard passing and hip switching from Lutz here around Kosho. We saw Andrew really struggle to establish a tight guard or really any sort of like knee shield guard. Lutz was able to jump around. And really interesting thing here for all three of these rounds and into the overtime round, we'd see Andrew begin to establish a guard here at certain points, and Lutz would never let him fully establish the guard before passing. He would begin, and then he'd change the distance on Andrew's legs in the guard, and then either hip switch over or a long step pass or jumping pass. We saw a big range of items that he used to pass the guard with, but the most telling thing here was he would never let Andrew establish a guard.
Yeah, and it was incredibly impressive because a guy this muscular and athletic to move with this fluidity, I mean, he was just, it was beautiful. He was moving like a lightweight.
He was never creating a scramble in a place that you didn't think he wanted to create a scramble.
And it didn't look like scrambles half the time either. I mean, it was him just
really
stepping
heavy
around,
hip pressure,
back stepping, switching his hips, going to that sort of surf riding position.
Yeah, not quite a neon belly, but a like right before you take neon belly and post up if you're going to like decide to slide over the mount. We saw him really use that position a ton versus Andrew in all four rounds of this match.
And even if Andrew rolled to his side to sort of begin re-guarding, he would still be able to do that surf riding.
Yeah,
sort of
and he'd begin to take like a Kimura or another hand grip or start to take the back or force to the turtle. Really, really great positional control for Mateus in this match.
Yeah, absolutely. So the second round goes the same, and even the third round. This is the only match where there wasn't a submission in regulation.
Yeah. But you deal with your title matches. Like, this is kind of... But at no point was it boring.
No,
like,
it was...
At no point was it slow or guys were stalling. It's like both dudes were working really hard. Andrew throws up multiple jumping guillotine attempts to get the takedown.
There was one that was pretty close. He was actually hanging off of Lutz at that point.
Yeah, but Lutz is able to push his head down, shuck him down. And so we move into the overtime round. And this is the first time that Emil and I had an inclination, because you hadn't had a sub at this point in time. So, like, this could go long. Like, we're seeing Lutz being really dominant, but I wondered what his gas tank was, like, to maintain that level of pace. Like, both guys were tired.
And there was a number of very close submissions that he had, that he had.
He had the arm, like,
the arm
really
bar
tight.
Yep.
At one point, he had a Kimura, like, really tight locked up. He almost had, the triangle, I wouldn't say it was close, but it was very, very controlling. He jumps a triangle, I think at round one, that was really, really controlling. Another thing is, we never saw him switch over from those triangle positions into the armbar. He really wanted the control with his legs for the triangle.
I thought
was interesting that he wasn't going to just like, oh, pop over the armbar. No, he wanted the control more so than he wanted the submission, it seemed like, in those positions.
Yeah, he would definitely sit there for 30 seconds, 60 seconds, then definitely go for the submission. He was, don't get me wrong, he was going for the submissions at all times, but he was crushing
and
really cooking.
He talked about this after the match. We spoke to him after, you know, after the kind of the event was letting out. We spoke to him for a little bit, and he talked about, and Emil, you were talking to him, and you said, based on what rule set he's competing in, the biggest difference that he modulates is his pace. And so I wonder if why he decided to control these positions in the way he did was because he knew this match could be 45 minutes long if it had to be.
Right. Yeah, definitely something that could have played into that. But again, he had at least maybe a half dozen sub attempts. So
he was three rounds.
I think he was doing more short term control, not with the idea of draining the gas tank, but just
because you only have 5 minutes,
right?
Like,
exactly.
You can only cook a guy in a position for so long before like your round runs out.
So ultimately, Lutz wins in overtime by it's a little hard to tell if it was a shoulder lock or an actual choke. He had a triangle locked almost from the back, but more from the side.
Yeah.
And he begins reaching for Cockle's arm.
To me, it looked like the arm, but in that position, it's so tight. Like, neither which would have surprised me if it was what was finishing, but really good performance, sound performance from Lutz. It'll be exciting to see him. I think we'll see him in ADCC or no?
I think so, and he's also, it sounds like, he will be with SAGC.
We're going to see him again.
Yeah,
which will be super exciting.
They're still playing around with dates for that, and we'll definitely announce when one gets solidified. But he'll be defending that title.
Dude, even if we're not doing commentary again,
I'll go. That event was so much fun. It was within three hours.
Like, don't make the drive.
Yeah, hands down.
So let's move in. You got anything else to say about that match?
Nope. I do want to talk a little bit about what Lutz was talking about in terms of his intensity and rule set a little bit. So I got to speak with him afterwards, like Maine said. And
yeah, I kind of jumped into the conversation late. I was trying to get all our commentary stuff together, and I was like, Emil, go talk to people because I can do all the tech stuff, and I can't do tech stuff and talk to people. So you go talk to people because you can't do the tech stuff. Let me do all the tech stuff here, and you talk to guys.
So mainly I wanted to talk to Lutz to see which events he was going to be competing in, where could we see him in the future.
Yeah, we're going to see him perform again.
And he immediately launches into this discussion that I realized halfway through, like, yeah, this is actually what I wanted to talk to you about.
This is a better question than what I had talked about.
Yeah, so he starts talking. He says, oh, I compete in any rule set, Fight to Win, Kasai, you know, any of these rule sets, it doesn't matter to me. What matters, the only problem with these rule sets is people who try to game these rule sets. And I said, oh, okay, that's interesting. Well, what do you have a preference for these rule sets? Which one's your favorite? And he says, ADCC, hands down.
I love me some ADCC rules. I've said it for years.
And this is where he says what you clarified earlier, which is the rule set doesn't matter to him. Just the only thing that changes is his intensity and his pace,
right,
which is awesome. I think that absolutely makes so much sense to me. And it's one of the reasons why I would watch Lutz in any rule set.
Well, those high-level guys, usually you see high-level guys be really, really successful all around, but you see them be more successful in certain rule sets. And I think that's because certain styles, like guys at high level don't change their style. But you know, for Lutz, he's saying he's not changing his style, he's changing his intensity,
right,
which I think is a really interesting way to think about that. Because we've always talked about like seeing guys like Wagner and various rule sets and Tone and various rule sets and Buchecha and like all these guys at the top level, how are they going to look like in X rule set? But I think that's probably what a lot of them are doing is like, I don't have to change my game. I have to change the intensity in which I go into the match because, okay, it might be a tournament format. I might have to save some gas for some later rounds. It might be a 10-minute super fight. Okay, I don't have to save as much gas there. It might be a three round title fight up to 15 minutes and then unlimited overtime. It's like,
the only time I've heard of those guys that you just mentioned really gaming a lot is for the EBI rules and getting ready for...
Everyone loves to game the EBI rules.
Yes.
It's something about that rule set you see guys... maybe it's because there's like 25 grand on the line or like... I don't know, but guys love to game. I mean, Cummings said it in his interview. He's like, I'm looking for overtime.
Yes. Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I was thinking about was them talking about how much they prep for overtime. And you can see, absolutely, their skill set revolves around that quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. But that, again, you're playing to your rule set. It's nothing bad about it, but it's interesting when you hear a guy talk about not changing and gaming the rule set, not liking that people do that, but literally just going into a different intensity for the different rule sets.
So it was awesome to hear Lutz's perspective on it, and for sure his style is the kind that I would want to watch under any rule set. So
definitely keep
an eye out for him, and we'll be giving him shout outs as well.
Guy at that level, third of the world, like stand up performances at Kasai, Fight to Win, like all that stuff. Keep your eye on him.
Yep.
And big places.
Props to Andrew for bringing up Total War for 18 minutes.
Only guy to make it all three rounds, neither guy gets subbed.
Yeah, by hands.
That's impressive.
And that's defending subs against the most accomplished person in that particular event.
I think that's. So. I think that's probably great. And that's why it's at the top of the card.
Yep.
So let's move on to some other matches then. Unless you got anything else you want to add about that match?
That's it.
So let's move into the featured endurance matches next. So these matches again are the endurance format, so 3 5-minute rounds, and there was a bunch of these in the card. They did this for the matches before the title matches, and they also did this for the preliminary matches in the card. Again, we're gonna get into those a little later, but let's go through the main card endurance matches. So where do you want to start, Emil?
So the first one that occurred. This is Dante Muschamp versus Michael Moore. The first round, Michael wins by inside heel hook, by regular heel hook. The second
heel hook. Sorry. The lesser of the heel hooks, Emil. You said that so dismissively. Oh, he was inside heel. I mean, I'm sorry, just
the regular heel hook.
The
reason why I say regular heel hook is that inside heel hooks always terrify me the most out of any leg lock.
Yeah.
If
we saw some terrifying leg locks on this card.
This is actually one of the matches where there was a terrifying leg lock. So first round, Michael Moore wins by heel hook. Second round, Dante wins by inside heel hook. So,
oh shit, we're going to a third round with both guys getting one sub.
I think that was the certainly the first match where this happened. This might be the only match where
it happened. I think this was the only match where that happened. This was one of the matches that made me really excited for the format, because it was like, oh shit, the guy got subbed. Okay, can you do it again? Oh shit, the other guy got subbed.
This, and I have this round definitely as a recommended round to go, or this match to go back and watch. Definitely go back and watch Muschamp versus Moore. It's awesome. The third round, there's no score, so they go into overtime.
Yep. And which is unlimited time. So Amir and I look at each other like, this could go long. But given you've had both guys sub each other in regulation. So I was like, well, realistically, we can see one of them do it again. This shouldn't be that long. And it was not.
It was not. So Michael's on his back with Dante attempting to pass here. And it looked like Michael was either setting up a De La Hiva or maybe trying to get an outside Ashigarami or something like that. And instead, he throws a very, very, very tight toe hold, explosive toe hold.
Like, it was actually like a one-arm toe hold, basically, is how he finished it. And they were on the other side of the mat, so I actually didn't have as good of an angle as Emil had for this. And you just hear, and it was like, oh, that's tight.
Yeah.
And
we saw Dante limping a little bit afterwards.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
A lot of it. Again, I hope his knee is fine. It looked actually like it attacked his foot. So I hope it's just like a sprain in the top of the foot. I actually didn't get a chance to speak to him and actually ask, hey, what happened? Like, are you out or like, are you sore? So, but again, hopefully he's
on the mat, but this match was excellent. Either way.
Go back and watch this for these guys, because it was super exciting, and listen to Emil and I butcher some names.
So the next of the endurance matches was Sia Webb versus Matt Dvorvery.
This was quick.
Yes. So the first round, Matt wins by heel hook, and the second round, Matt wins by inside heel hook.
Yeah, this whole match was probably, I think, under 3 minutes long. Like, it was real quick, and that was kind of the flavor for the entire card, for the entire evening. Like, even the matches that went late and like didn't have submissions, like the guys were working the entire time. And so if you got a fast submission or you got a submission later in the round, like none of the matches felt long, which is super rare. I think the card had 17 matches on it, which is super rare for a card of this size. Like, at some point in the night, like, stuff slows down. It just didn't happen with this card. It was really interesting. And you had matches like this that were like short 2 minute matches, 3 minute matches, and then you were on to the next match. It was great.
So the next endurance match was Gabriel Tejada versus Joe Gojani. And
I was going to let you say those names, Emil.
Yeah.
Because I think I messed up Tejada's name a couple times.
I could be too, but Gabe, I think, was one of the 10th Planet guys. And he wins the first round by armbar from back triangle. And the second round, he wins by Super Kimura. And we can see him start to set it up.
Yeah. And Emil on the broadcast goes, oh, looks like he's setting up a Super Kimura. And I look over to Emil and I give him the slanty eyes. Like, and then I go on the mic, we should explain what that is, Emil. And he starts to go through the explanation. And as he's explaining it, he gets to tap with it.
Yeah, this is an excellent round, excellent match overall.
Yeah, really, definitely really good match overall. And actually, if you listen to the commentary, you'll hear Emil actually explain what Ultra Kimura is.
It's a Super Kimura. And
it is a Super Kimura or Ultra Kimura? Are they different things?
Maybe. You know what? We really ought to go up there and train with those guys and hopefully pick up some of their lingo.
Dude, I have 3 weeks off that I'm just going to do the show stuff, clean my house up, and train jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get out. I'm hoping in November to sometimes go up to Bethlehem guys, say hello, and bring some notes back with like, hey, this is a Al Pacino. This is a ham sandwich. This is an Ultra Kimura.
Which were all moves that we heard getting called out. And I would love to know those beforehand. And
I'd
know
love like
of
a picture, like
for
a color by number for like, oh, this is what you mean. Cool. So yeah, a great match, a fun match. And now those are the only featured endurance matches on the main card. Before that, you want to move into the traditional matches, or want to talk about the prelims?
We'll do traditional matches. So
all right, let's start with the traditional matches.
We'll start at the top. This is the last of the traditional matches was Joshua Peters, who's actually a Maryland guy.
Yeah, he's a local guy. He runs College Park MMA.
That's right.
We've seen him on Fight to Win. We've seen him ref Fight to Win. He's a very small gentleman.
That's right.
And his opponent was also a small dude.
Yeah, Jason Frawley, who actually was the proprietor of
Paper Street BJJ.
Yeah,
the
where actual,
the
event
location,
was.
Yeah, the location of the event was at. So it was really, this is a cool match for a couple reasons. One, Josh Peters came out with a walker, which I thought was entertaining.
Yeah.
Two, this is a black belt match. I don't know. I think this might have been the only black belt match on the card. I'm not sure.
So.
And I could be talking out of my ass there, but I know both these guys are black belts. The other cool thing was both these guys are smaller black belts.
Yep.
Like both these guys weigh about 115 or like
120.
Maybe 125. So it was cool to see a black belt smaller guy match because you just don't see a whole lot of those locally. You know, you see them in the Roosevelt divisions, but even those guys are mid-120s, 125. Like, both these dudes were under 125, and that was really cool to see.
Shout out to Jason for hosting, too. What an awesome
yeah,
place.
Yeah, hosting at your gym and then competing in a traditional match. Like, it's a 10-minute super fight match.
And Jason, to his credit, for being a small guy, has really, really controlling pressure. He was,
yeah, you have to as a small guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a fucking black belt, too.
Yeah, no, it was really impressive. So he was able to really kind of control and dictate.
He really
the
climbed
pace there.
Up Peters' body here.
Yes.
And, you know, we saw him take low control, take high control, and really just, like, snake all the way up from mount position. Eventually, he finishes Peters with an armbar, right? Was it an armbar meal?
Yep.
Yeah, it was an armbar.
Yeah, and so this was a 10-minute sub match. So there's a sub finishes.
So you only got to beat the guy once.
That's right. So that match ended with Jason as the victor.
So on to the next match.
So the next traditional match was John Tuxford versus Ed Abresley. Ed
we had the big dudes on this match.
Yes.
I think these were definitely, these were by far the biggest dudes on the event. I want to say they were each combined, they were each like over 250 or something like that.
Something like that. They big were huge.
Dudes.
Ed ends up winning by rear naked choke.
So moving on to the next match, we have Michael Villeneuve.
Villeneuve,
that's what it was. Okay, I knew I was pronouncing his name incorrectly, and he corrected us. He's like, hey, it's actually pronounced this way. And I was like, thank you. I'm going to forget that. So props to you, Emil, versus Dylan Martin.
That's right. And Mike wins by knee bar here, and it was a excruciating one. So he starts off a little bit high on the knee line, and he readjusts beautifully and then does the submission finish where he puts the legs behind his shoulder.
I think just he had one leg. He didn't have both.
Oh, okay.
He just had the one leg, and he pulls it up his body. Because basically what you're trying to do in this knee bar is you're trying to pull the knee out of the person's legs. So you're trying to clear the knee line here. And so Michael knows he's losing the knee bar, and so he yanks up, pulls the knee above his knee line, above his hips as much as he can get it, and then he rotates the knee behind his shoulder and arm, like under the armpit knee bar finish.
And just begins hipping into it.
Yeah. And he does it slow. Like, hips into it, like, slow and turns and turns. And
there
was
enough time
like,
for us to comment and say on the commentary, that's a deep knee bar. It's going to put a lot of pressure on the knee.
And then you hear me go,
yeah,
make a noise as I watch. We're probably, 15 feet away?
Yeah.
As I watched the knee bend the other direction a little bit, and I was like, ooh, that
hyperextended.
That was rough.
You could hear exactly when the submission sank in.
Neil, I actually have the audio from it. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, I think we should play it.
All right.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, really nice knee bar attempt.
Michael has
leaped
into
knee
a knee bar. He's a little bit high on the knee line, but he's readjusting
but it is
now.
Tight.
I think he's going to – he's putting a lot
back.
Of pressure on that knee.
Ooh.
Ooh, wow.
That is a deep knee bar.
That is a very deep knee bar. Michael was able to get the win. So that was the live recording of me and Maine doing commentary at SAGC7 for this particular match, and it makes us sound both professional and unprofessional.
Yeah, it sounds good. Like I was doing the submission, Ooh! I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's a thing that happened that I gotta...
So we wish speedy recovery to Dylan Martin. And
he limped off the mat. It was deep, and so we spoke to Michael after this, and he goes, yeah, his knee exploded.
I hope that's not the case.
I hope not, too, but having seen my fair share of a few knee bars, it looked rough.
Yep.
So hope he recovers, hope he's back, and props to Michael for really beautiful, like, usually when guys start to pull out of the knee bar in this way, guys will abandon it. It's rare. You got to really be confident in a knee bar game to be able to pull the knee through and then make that adjustment behind the arm. So I love that finish. It is a very, very strong finish. We saw Craig Jones finish like this at Quintet versus one of the Sambo Bros.
Yeah.
And
same result.
Same result. Really deep knee bar. As soon as they clasp the hands and begin to hip, it's so hard to escape from that position unless you can really kick off the guy's thighs and push all the way out. But you've got to do it in typically like one motion. You can't really like pull as the guy trying to defend the knee bar. So
yeah, because the knee can rotate a little bit. But in this case, Mike just did such a good job at repositioning himself. Yeah. So the next match was Dylan Gallett versus Dylan D-Boy Mazington.
That was not confusing at all on commentary.
Yeah, well, I mean, we went by D-Boy or Mazington. You know, I think it's pretty clear. D-Boy Mazington ends up winning by heel hook. The next traditional match after that was Bryant Pabon versus Kobe Rowland, when we have Bryant winning by guillotine. The match after that was Jules Knighton versus Stefan Christina. Stefan by armbar, and this was a really good match. So when the match is posted, go back and watch this one. This one's really good. Yeah. And it should be on YouTube, I think.
Yeah, they're going up on YouTube. I think a couple of them are up today. I know one of them's up today. I think the Lutz and Cockle match is up today. Definitely mute the matches, though, so that, you know, you can just watch the matches and you don't have to deal with whoever's talking on the microphones.
Yeah,
there.
Those weirdos.
So, yeah, another match was Tom Selimir versus Vic Kooner.
And Tom wins by calf slicer.
Do I love me some calf slicers?
Yeah, this is another move where I wonder if...
This is a 10th Planet calf slicer.
Yeah.
I don't know what the name for this is, but it was... it's not a calf slicer I see very often, and I honestly will have... I will need to go back and watch the match myself to figure out exactly what the leg entanglement position they got.
The bottom half guard was where he got it. So.
Right. And I've seen it before. I just... Again, without having the match footage directly in front of me right now, I don't want to speak too much on it. Really, really interesting setup. Really, really interesting calf slicer, because it wasn't like the standard calf slicer from like the bottom half guard. Like kind of like what Korean Zombie hit on... who was it? No, sorry, not Korean Zombie. Charles Oliveira hits in the UFC. Not that calf slicer. There was more leg entanglement there that happened to have better control and actually start to put pressure on the knee itself as well as the calf. So really cool sub. I need to go back and watch that again. I'm not gonna like espouse about my non-perfect memory about it, but it's a cool match. You should go back and watch that.
So next we go into the prelims, and the top of the prelims we have Jabal Brown versus Nathan Chrislip. And this is actually Jabal Brown's second match of the evening. He stepped in.
Why'd you start out of order?
Well, I said the top.
All right. Okay. I'll give you that then.
Yeah. So Jabal Brown.
He has it in our notes as round two.
Oh, you're reading off of the online.
Yeah, I'm document. Reading off of the digital notes as
I'm
I do.
I'm reading off of the notes that I took at the event like a professional.
Look, man. I was doing audio stuff, man. You were doing notes stuff. We're a team, Emil.
Yeah. So
Grappling Rewind.
So let me handle this.
You're not wrong.
So the first round, so the prelims were all endurance format, so the 3 5-minute rounds. The first round, Nathan wins by arm triangle, and the second he wins by, it looks like maybe a short choke. It was a little unclear. What the
I'm
tap
not sure.
Was
he,
from.
He got mounted. It was real, real quick. I think it was another arm triangle off the top.
Yep. The next match after that was John Vina versus Brock Stultz.
So, funny thing. I just realized this today. I've competed against Brock Stultz before.
Really?
Yeah. I competed against him at Good Fight Worlds back in, like, 2016. He was
awesome.
The first match I had in the gi. And dude hit my ass with a Sayonagi. Like, no one's business. And I have a great... a video of me just getting dropped. I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna get fucked up by this wrestler. And eventually I was able to, like, we had a really, really great match. And it was a lot of fun. So it was really funny. I recognized his name, and I couldn't figure out for the life of me, like, why I recognized his name. And I was like, why do I recognize this guy? It's like, oh man, I can be competing against this guy like 2 years ago.
Small world, man.
It's a super small world.
But this match was amazing. So John Vina wins the first round by outside heel hook. The second round, there's no score. And the third round, John wins by armbar. I got to say, John was really impressive in his versatility here. I think he looked good in every single phase of jiu-jitsu. His guard was really good. His passing was really good. He seemed comfortable on his feet. And his tank was impressive. I remember.
Dude, he kept that pace going the entire match. Like, go, 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 go. And I know Brock, too. And that dude can keep a pace. Like, our match was a 15-minute match with unlimited round overtime. Or sorry, with EBI rules overtime back at Good Fight. And that dude tried to kill me for 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's no
so
surprise.
It's like, I know both these. And seeing what the pace that John was able to keep, I was like, Jesus, both these guys are in better shape
than
me.
This is an excellent match. So go back and watch this one, too, when it gets
and
posted.
It's in that prelim format.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. In case you didn't notice, like, I had a lot of fun at this event, Emil.
Yeah, it was overall, again, this is amazing. The next prelim is going to be Jesse Gwynn and Rashid Perez. Sorry about that.
I think I called him Rashad on the broadcast. My bad. And I'd go back and read the note and be like, it's Rashid. It's not Rashad. It's Rashid, not Rashad.
He looked amazing. Absolutely dynamic. He had a cartwheel pass that actually worked.
Emil loves him some cartwheel passes.
I love ones that work too, and he nailed it. And I said, all right, this is only the second match of the event too, so I said, all right, this was
funny too, because we were doing commentary for this. The first couple matches, as in every time you go to a live jiu-jitsu event, or like really even like fights, the first couple matches the crowd is usually pretty quiet. And so Emil and I are sitting in the corner watching the matches, and we're like, okay, how loud do we be? Because literally, you can hear the match, and you can hear two dudes in the corner, like, talking about it.
Probably
just, like,
sounded like golf commentators. Like,
this is weird. So I haven't seen the audio for this yet, but I'm interested to see what the difference is from this match to the final match. So once the crowd got a little more loud, like, we were more comfortable speaking up. But, again, it was not a problem I thought I'd encounter when we were doing the commentary here, and it was really interesting. I was like, oh, yeah, like, I'm super uncomfortable talking, like, at a regular volume about the match because the dudes are, like, 3 feet away from me and can definitely hear me. Their corners can definitely hear me.
You don't want to critique someone's technique
when
they're that close.
Everyone in the arena can definitely hear me. So it's like, okay, well, I've got to be unbiased and talk about this, but I'm not going to talk super loud. I'm going to talk very quietly into this microphone.
So the first round, Rashid wins by rear naked choke. And the second round, Rashid wins by armbar. He's really, really talented. Going to be competing in the ADCC trials.
I'm so excited for the ADCC trials coming up.
Yeah.
There's so many guys. Like, the past, like, Philly and this event, there's been so many guys on Facebook. I've seen tons of guys I know. And on Instagram, I've seen tons of guys we know. Like, the trials apparently are huge.
Yeah. Everyone's going to be
insane.
Competing.
We're going to preview the trials here in a little bit, but it looks insane. Like, I never thought the trials were this big. Like, last time I watched the trials was the 2016. Yeah, 2016 trials for New Jersey. It was big, but it looks like it's exploded now.
Absolutely. So the first prelim is going to be Jabal Brown versus Eric Shaw. The first round, Eric wins by north-south choke, and the second round, Eric wins by howdy-doody choke.
Yeah, different choke. Emil looked at me. I said, how do you do choke? And Emil looked at me like, we were going to call it that? I was like, apparently I learned that's a different choke. So the how do you do choke is basically, instead of a head and arm where the arm is on the top, it's the arm is being compressed by the body. So it is an arm compression, or like a head and arm choke, but with the arm in a different position. So it's a different choke. I mean, I learned me some jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, we all did. And this was the first match of the event, and the submissions came quick, and we realized at that point, okay, this is
really set the tone. It's like, hey, we're submitting guys quick. Strap in.
Yeah, that's right.
So, what else do we want to talk about? So that's all the matches.
How did you feel about commentating?
It was fun. I mean, I'm amazing at everything I do, and I've never had a misstep. I've never had to retract something I've said or anything like that.
You've never had to cut something out of a podcast.
I've never had to, like, cut something out, re-upload it, and then, like, apologize. Never had to do that, Emil.
Never mess the name up. Yeah. Jesus. It was an awesome, awesome event.
It was a great experience. This is the first time you've ever done commentary for anything, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I've never done it before.
You were good. I was impressed with your performance, Emil.
Well, I appreciate it, man. You were really good, too. How do you feel now about commentating, about hearing other people commentate?
I have talked historically a lot of shit on this show about bad commentary. I would like to take at least 30 to 70% of that back and let you guys know that commentary is kind of hard to do, especially when I hear good commentators. I'm going to give them a lot more credit because it is somewhat difficult. I would love to do more commentary, though.
Absolutely. I would love to do it again. And SAGC made it so easy. They put on such a great event. There was no downtime, no lull, no slow matches. Nothing. It was completely
exciting. And again,
going to these events,
like every single jiu-jitsu event I've been to, like pretty much anything live, everyone's super friendly, super happy to talk to you, everyone's just having a good time and happy that we're like watching some jiu-jitsu. It's just an amazing community. And every time I go, I always think there's gonna be some asshole, some guy that's mean, like some guy that is just having a bad day. Never. Or if there is that, you just don't talk to him. And everyone's super friendly. It was amazing. Like, the community is so cool. And, like, people were super respectful, came in and said hi to us at the booth, like, between the matches. And, like, hey, you know, good to see you here.
Yeah, Jam popped by. That was great to see
him. I talked to Zach Maslany. Dudes were super friendly. And I'm always amazed how friendly the community is and how great, like, the promoters are. It's like there's no at least I have not met them so far, shady promoters.
No.
I know there are. But right now I haven't met any. And so if I can keep that streak going, like, it's amazing. It was amazing to work with these guys. Super happy. Hope to see the matches up soon.
So check out the matches on YouTube. They should be coming up in the next day or two.
Yeah, they're putting some highlights on Instagram as well. So go follow them on Instagram, SAGC. Amazing amazing event.
We'll probably have a vote on Instagram for submission event.
We're going to be throwing up a poll on like once the matches are up. Probably I think Wednesday. I want to throw it up for like what your favorite match was, or like do some polls on some of the stuff for SAGC, because it was a really fun event to go and do.
Absolutely.
You got anything else you want to talk about, Mio?
That's it.
All right, great event. Go back and watch it. So on to our recap of Fight to Win 91 in Framingdale, New Jersey. This event paid out a total of $20,765 in salaries and commissions and was headlined by Tex Johnson versus Tom DeBlass. I mean, we're going to start with this one. This event was happening as we were commentating for SAGC, so we have not had a chance to go through every single one of the matches, but we've looked at a good portion of them that we want to talk about. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the submissions of the night. We had Fiona Margaret Watson defeating Karen Lingle by armbar. This was submission of the night for the black belts.
Dude, the armbar here was real, real cool. It was quick. She really shoots her hips up there from the guard and then just takes the arm. So
Karen was standing over her trying to guard pass, and Fiona just really beautifully rotates on her hips and is able to get a nice, clean armbar from the guard.
Yeah, real quick tap. She's up on her shoulders. Nice submission. Deservedly submission of the night. So the next match we want to talk about is the fight of the night between Joe Marino and versus David Escobar.
So this was a very technical gi match. We saw lots of sweeping back and forth.
We saw a Gogo Plata attempt.
There was even a Gogo Plata attempt.
You never see those in there.
In the gi?
Very rarely see those in the gi.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Who's the last guy you've seen Gogo Plata in the gi at a black belt level?
I cannot recall. You know, and even then, usually it ends up becoming a omoplata.
Yeah, because you can suit everybody. He tried to do it here from a really squared on, straight on position. It was really interesting. Usually when you see guys finish the go-go plata, you'll see them get really, really far to the side, like they're going to go for the omoplata, and they just shoot that leg in front. This was not that. This is real close, real, like, right in the center, and it was interesting. You just don't see that a whole lot at a black belt level. So that was a lot of fun to see. What's the next match you want to talk about, Emil?
Let's go through the black belt results. We'll start with the headliner, Tex Johnson defeating Tom DeBlass by decision. Becomes the Fight to Win Masters Nogi Heavyweight Champ.
This was a lot of seated guard.
Yeah.
From both competitors.
You know, definitely people, you know, both of them trying to assert their games on each other, but they're both big. You heard Murillo booming in the background, yelling different moves for Tex Johnson to get, and even small things like underhooks and stuff like that. And you see Tex kind of frustrated.
Well, even the commentators kind of wave. They're like, yeah, he's kind of waving stuff off, and I'm not sure like why, if like he just doesn't feel comfortable with the blast doing, because the blast is a strong dude, and they've both got that heavy pressure, like slower, bigger guy jiu-jitsu, and that's what we saw here in this match.
So it looked like Tex was a little bit frustrated, at least. You know, he was definitely, like, shrugging
at
his corner.
That's kind of DeBlass's game, though. Yep. Like, DeBlass has that real slow, shut down your game kind of game. And that's, you know, that's what we've seen him do in ADCC. That's what we saw here.
So Tex wins. The next match is...
It was by decision. There was
by
no
decision.
There, yep.
Lincoln Pereira defeating Raji Bryson Barrett by flying triangle.
Lincoln had places to be.
Yep. He was like, all right, cool, 15 seconds in, I'm leaping into this.
Dude, he leaps like 8 seconds in, and then he finishes, I want to say, like 22 seconds into the match.
Something like that, yeah. So
really quick. And again, I feel like I see less flying triangles in the gi, but that may just be thinking incorrectly. But again, at black belt, dude, it's tough, especially at light heavyweight.
Well,
that's a big dude jumping on you to grab a triangle.
I think it probably happens more in the gi, because it happens like in this match where someone will get the grips first, and it's a little bit easier,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, you're right.
You have the friction.
You can kind of hold on. Your legs can kind of, like, lock onto the guy.
Flying triangle is a little bit of a misnomer in this particular match, because he gets his grips, and he throws his legs up, but it's kind of as he's just sitting down. So he
almost uses it as a snap down, kind of.
Right, exactly.
Like, where you're just trying, okay, I'm trying to get the match to the ground. I'm going to take these grips. I'm going to take this leg position if I can get it. But really, I just want you in my guard.
So he was relying a lot on his grips, and is able to readjust and get the submission.
Yeah, you're right. I think in the gi, you see it. You're right. You do see this a lot. It almost is used as a snap down, or like as a guard. It's a triangle that I'll take, but I'm using it as a guard pull if I don't get it. And that's why I think you saw the angle on this be a little different. It wasn't as traditional. And he kind of gets on the ground and goes, oh, I can lock this up, finishes locking up the triangle, and then gets the tap.
Right.
So, again, we talked literally more about this match than than how long it was, but it was a fun match. You should go back and watch the finishing sequence because these guys, again, at the larger weight classes, you don't see as much flying shit. So right. When you do see it, I think it's a treat.
So the next match was another treat. Nick Calvanese defeating Davante Johnson by split decision.
Close match. I mean, obviously it's a split decision.
Really contested both ways. We saw Nick Calvanese the weekend before.
At Philly.
Win in Philly. Actually,
we
saw Raji Bryson. Yeah.
To his girlfriend there.
Right,
and she
right.
said yes.
Recently engaged Nick Calvanese.
That's the word I was looking for, Emil.
We saw Raji Bryson Barrett also on that card as well. Nick Calvanese defeating Davante Johnson in an exciting match. The match after that, we have Fiona Watson defeating Karen Lingle by armbar.
And that was submission of the night for the Black Belts. We were talking about this match.
Jen Russell defeating Abby Passanelli by split decision. Alex Eklund defeating Chris Noonan via choke. Garrett Lavaggi defeating Albert Hughes by rear naked choke. Enrique Galarza defeating Stephen Barrett, by decision.
We've said a lot of names the past couple days, Emil.
Yeah.
It's getting to you a little bit.
Well, it's Enrique Galarza Catal versus defeating Stephen Barrett by decisions. We have Carlos Eduardo Cacharo defeating Eddie Prince by decision. Mike Kalika defeating Joe
Appadesano. Yep.
Via decision, and we have Joseph Marino defeating Tony Rivera by decision.
Onto the brown belt results, as I butcher a basic word.
Gaetano Mione defeating Jerry Aquino by armbar. Stefan DeAngelis defeating Nate Ray via rear naked choke. Antoine Delanoy defeating John Bayon by choke. Nicholas Tamanuta Salas defeating Jesse Slovens by armbar. We have Chris Sobduno defeating Chris Tezenu by rear naked choke.
And that was submission of the night for the brown belts.
Marcus Johnson defeating Nick Koch by knee bar.
We have Mateo Martinez defeating Pat Hemingway via knee bar. We have Anton Delaney defeating Michael. What's that last name?
Oettinger.
He just defeats him. We can't tell. We're reading off some results here to give it to you. And that one does not have a result listing.
We got Kyvan Gonzalez-Jimenez defeating Phil Doig by split decision.
And then on to the purple belt results.
Emil Fischer defeating David Gonzalez by toe hold becomes Fight to Win purple belt no-gi light heavyweight champion.
Emil, I'm supposed to read what they become.
Hey, I just got excited. There's another Emil on here.
There is Emil, and it doesn't have an E on it, I always put. So.
Hell yeah. Good for you, Emil. Next match is Guppy Andrea defeating Kimberly Robles by triangle.
We have Diego Piera defeat Riviera defeating Chris Hernan via choke. We have Alex Nemeth defeating Jesse Shaw via kneebar. That was submission of the night for the purple belts. We have Sean, give me the name, Emil.
Yadamarco.
Defeating Andrew Valencia via decision. We have Gabby Etel. What is it? Etzel. Defeating Cassandra Vega via Kimura. That was fight of the night for the purple belts. We have Steve Tonger defeating Josh Niedrich via heel hook. We have Josh Baker defeating Manuel Capero via decision. We have Ryan Christopher defeating Mike. Give me the name.
DeCassian.
Via decision. And we have Robert Daigle defeating John. Give me the name.
Stottlemyre.
Via rear naked choke. The final match for the purple belts is Eric Naples defeating Colin Kelly via triangle. We had one kids match on this card, and we had Keegan Foote defeating Marcos Alacorn via decision, and that was fight of the night for the kids.
So all of the matches are individually up on Flow Grappling. You can go back and watch them. It's really exciting. Lots of really good talent on this card, so definitely
a lot of guys we cover very frequently, so it's like, I want to go back. Again, the matches are literally up. It is 7 o'clock on Monday. And we were commentating this, so I haven't got a chance to go through all of them yet. There's a bunch of guys that I recognize, and that's what I'm going to go through. I'm going to go back through and watch the whole event, look at the title fights, the purple belt, because I haven't seen that yet, and look at some of the lower card matches, because I pretty much will always go back and watch any leg submission on Fight to Win again, because I love watching dudes get kneeboard. I don't know why, Emil.
Because you're a sick fuck, man. That's why.
No, you're not wrong. So that does it for Fight to Win 91 in New Jersey. So it was a busy weekend for grappling, and there was two other events that happened this weekend that Emil and I have not got a chance to go through yet. Battle Grapple 3 in the UK happened this weekend, and had some great names on it. Haven't got a chance to go through the results on that yet. I think it's like €5 for the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So pretty cheap if you want to go back and watch it. I believe it's up now on their pay-per-view, so I'm going to go back and watch some of those. Potentially going to cover it next week. Not quite sure. World Series Jiu-Jitsu also had their $10,000 event in New York, and that is concluded as well. Same thing. Haven't got a chance to go back and watch that yet, but it occurred as well. So if you have not got a chance to watch it, interested, now you know. The 2018 Spider Invitational, the finals, is taking place on November 3rd, and it's got some really good names on it, Amiya. We have a 100, we have a under 76 kilogram division, and we have an over 76 kilogram division. This is the final, so this is all the guys that are in the tournament leading up to this. This is the final event, and we have some good names. We also have some super fights on it we're going to get to in a minute. So you want to talk about the under 76, the over 76, Emil?
Do under 76.
Right, we have Insong Jang versus Paulo Miao, and then in the first match, and then the second match, we have Masahiro Iwasaki versus Jonathan Alves. This is going to be exciting, dude.
Outstanding. It's going to be one of those, anytime you have a lightweight division like this, the movement is always explosive, and in this case, the competitors will only have a maximum of two matches. So potentially they could really, explode
push that pace.
It's one thing if you have, six match tournament or something like that in order to win.
In the spider format, you're not burning guys out in a single night. So I kind of like that. You get to see really good performances from guys and you get to see some really interesting matchups. So
it's closer to the super fight format, which is really nice. People fresh.
I'm really excited. We have potential for some really fun match. Again, I'm a big Paulo fan. I really like Masahiro as well, but I'm really excited to see either Miao versus Alves or versus Iwasaki. I know we're going to see him versus Jang, but I'm excited about either one of those second round matchups there, so that's exciting. Anything else you want
to
add?
No, let's go to this plus 76 kilogram.
We have Vinicius Fedada versus Kanan Duarte in the first match, and we have Victor Hugo versus DJ Jackson in the second match.
Just outstanding. Great, great talent here.
Dude, has Kanan been against DJ Jackson yet?
Possibly. I think
we've seen Kanan versus Hugo. I don't know why we've seen that. It might have been at Iron Brown Belt or World Series of Jiu-Jitsu. I think it might have been a World Series of Jiu-Jitsu, that $50,000 tournament. I think we might have seen Kanan versus Hugo in that one, but I don't know. He might have been against Hugo might have been against Kanan. I don't remember. And this is me not pulling up my results beforehand. But again, this side of the bracket looks awesome as well. So
yeah, DJ Jackson's been on a lot recently too.
He's been in the gi more, which has been interesting. Again, he's been on Spider a couple times in the gi. I think, where did we see him versus Craig Jones? What event was that in the gi?
Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, we just saw that recently. I forget where. I think it was an Asian promotion as well. And I don't know if it was a Japanese promotion or if it was Spider. I don't think it was Spider, but it's going to burn me now because I can't remember where it was. So again, I like seeing guys
bracket.
In the gi though. And DJ Jackson's been more of a no gi guy recently. We just saw him last weekend on
what was it?
It was CBD. I couldn't even say it. I was so excited.
CBD Invitational.
Yeah, he was on the CBD Invitational last week versus Durino.
Yeah,
we saw him in Durino in the finals, and then we saw him. I forget who the first round matchup was, but dude, super active competitor. We cover him frequently. He changed his name.
Really?
I don't. Yeah, he used to be De Alonso DJ Jackson, and he went in at CBD as Man Ram or something like that, or something, which
awesome.
Which is a funny name change to do because he's been DJ for so long. But I'll be interesting to see if he keeps his nickname for this event as well.
We'll see. So
we
have,
got super fights.
Yeah, Fabricio Werdum versus Lucas the Hulk Barbosa. That's going to be an amazing match,
dude. That'll be really fun. But Barbosa's a top level guy now, and Werdum is a former ADCC champion, former world champion in the gi. This is super exciting. I love these meeting of the old guard matches. We saw last week on CBD, Rodolfo Vieira versus Muhammad Ali. It's another one of these matches where I always seem to count out the guys that are former world champions that are older. Look, and Hodger and Bushesha, the old dudes still got, I'm not calling Verdum old here, but the more and more I see these legacy matches and these big name grapplers from yesteryear compete against the current crop, the more I'm impressed at the jiu-jitsu that the former champions have.
Yeah, how well it holds up and how effective they are.
Dude, that old school game don't quit.
No.
It's just solid jiu-jitsu. So I'm really excited. I think this is in the gi.
It's no gi.
It is no gi.
Yep.
Okay, so that'll be interesting because, but again, both these guys are dope in no-gi. Fabricio is a champion at ADCC. Hulk is, I think, finalist.
Fabricio also has an IBJJF Worlds Championship as well.
He does. Yeah, Hulk doesn't have one of those yet. Hulk hasn't been a black belt that long, though. So he's a guy that I could foresee getting one in the next couple years, but, does not have one at this point. Speaking of champions, the other super fight we have on the card is Shane Jamil Hill Taylor versus Jun Sung Cho. That's exciting. This is the match he was talking about during the seminar.
There you go.
And so I didn't know who he was talking about at the time, but reading it, I'm like, oh, that's who this is. So that's going to be an exciting match. I think this is no-gi.
Yep, it's in Nogi as well.
Which kind of sucks because I just learned more of Shane's game from this in the seminar in the Gi, but again, I like watching him compete.
Just means that you'll get to learn new stuff, man.
I'll get to see his Nogi game, which is cool. Now that I understand his Gi game a little better, I'm not going to say understand it at all, but understand it a little better, I know kind of what he's doing. So, dude, this event is always great. There's always usually Brazilian, Portuguese commentary, Korean commentary, and English commentary. I'm not sure what commentary Flow will have. I assume Flow will have the English commentary, but usually they're streaming on Facebook, Flow, and YouTube, and it's in different languages on different platforms. So I watched the Portuguese commentary last time on YouTube, and you should not do that if you don't speak Portuguese. So anything else to add to me on this event?
No, that's it. It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be super exciting. So moving into the preview of ADCC East Coast Trials. This might be legitimately the craziest bracket I have ever seen in my entire life.
So they've released the competitors list here, and it's enormous.
I'm going to go through just some names on the under 65.
So we're literally just scrolling down this list here and just reading off names as we recognize them.
These are all guys that we've covered on the show, okay? Like guys that not just like here's a name, but here's a guy that we have thought a match is good enough to cover on our show. We have Jordan Holy, Zach Green. We have Nathan Torres, Andrew Phillips, Juni Acacio. We have Frank Rosenthal. We have Marvin Castell, Nikki Ryan, Josh Hayden, Andrew Tackett, Ricky Lule, Ethan Krellenstein, John Kallestein, John Battle, Sean Applegate, John Vega. We saw him last week. This weekend. Yesterday.
Yeah, we just covered him on Saturday. Yep, John Vega.
Dennis Pressey Jr., the dude we covered. We saw him win the title for Fight to Win at 45 in the Gi. We have Ray De Leon. Zach Maslany's in this division. Like, Keith Krikorian's in this division. The list goes on and on and on. It is insane. Okay? That's just the under 65.9 kilogram division.
Yeah. Like, it's stacked.
I have never... Dude, the worlds aren't this stacked.
Yeah.
Like, I have legitimately, in my entire life, never seen a bracket as stacked as this.
I think it's a testament to now how much talent is on the East Coast.
There was a really interesting thread that I read on Reddit a couple days ago, and it was, what do you think is more prestigious or like basically better for your career, an ADCC title or an IBJJF world title? And almost universally, it might be the Reddit audience, everyone was like ADCC, 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 and I think this is why.
Yeah.
It's like just the level of talent going into by the way, this isn't even ADCC. This is the trials to get into ADCC.
Yeah.
That's how crazy this bracket is. It's an open trial, an open event. It's like, I legitimately have no idea how we're going to cover it, but I'm super excited to do so. So let's look at the under 76 kilogram division. We have big names, Dustin Akbari, David Garmo. Who else we got that's huge here?
Enrique Galarza.
Galarza, Kevin Burbridge. Who else do we have? Dude, there's so many names. Jeremiah Vance is in here. Jason Rao is in here. He's the champ. PJ Barch is in here. Andrew Cockle is in here. Like, it's just, I am a loss for words, and that's a pretty rare thing for me. Given just how huge, I mean, these brackets have to have 90 guys in them.
Yeah.
At least.
They're enormous.
Okay. Then we have the under 87 kilogram division. This division, in case you didn't know, also crazy. Like some names that are in this division, Vince Barbosa. We have Devontae Johnson. We have Kevin Williams. We have Nicholas Green. It's Korean Bamba. Nice. We have Matthew Tesla. We have Chris Dempsey. Who else do we have here? Any names jumping out at you, Emil?
No, you're reading them.
We have Hunter Colvin is in here. We have who else? I'm looking through this and it's literally crazy. Jordan Lutze and James Brasco and Jeremy Tyler, a dude from my old gym in Maine, Titan Athletics.
Awesome.
Is on the trials. It'll be interesting. I think there's a couple guys from the gym that are from my old gym up in Maine that are on this. So the under 98.9 kilogram division.
We got Tim Spriggs.
Yep. We have Kevin Gallagher. Let's see, who else do we have? I should have made a giant list. We have Elliot Kelly. We have Dylan Smith. We have John Cobb. We have Alexander Moreno. Like, dude, huge names. And then the plus 99 kilogram division. I would not want to be in this division.
Got Tex Johnson.
Hudson Taylor. Billy Brown from Titan Athletics. Billy's about 330, maybe 360. He once heel hooked me just with one arm on the mat.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
He's a big dude. Kevin Holland, dude, these divisions, I cannot imagine what this is like. This is just North American tries, by the way. These aren't even Brazilian guys. These aren't anyone else. This is just the guys pretty much. There's a lot of some guys from the West Coast here, mostly guys from the East Coast that popped onto this event to try to get that spot for ADCC. That's how big ADCC is, dude.
Yeah.
We've never covered a full cycle for ADCC. It's amazing.
Yeah. No, this will be really exciting. And, you know, again, this is just, it's incredible to see how advanced jiu-jitsu's gotten on the East Coast. You know, Southern California for the longest time has been kind of considered the mecca
for everyone still kind of considers the mecca because all the big Brazilian guys go over there.
We're starting to see, like, a powerhouse now in the, particularly New York area.
The New York area. Even around New York, the New Jersey area, we're starting to go to PA.
Yeah, that's
and
what I'm
like
including. Yeah.
Down the seaboard. It's just, there's so many good guys now. This division, these are legitimately some, I'm kind of a lost words. These are legitimately the biggest, toughest brackets I've ever seen. Like, there are legitimately six guys in every bracket that could take it.
Yeah, that's going to be a really, really deep bracket.
And dude, imagine you're that guy. You win this, you're going to ADCC.
Yeah.
Think of how deep those brackets. Like, yeah, dude, it's an exciting time to be a fan of jiu-jitsu. No idea how we're going to cover the thing, but I am excited for it.
Yeah.
You got anything else you want to add, Emil?
That's it.
Awesome. How do you think we should cover it?
I think what we should do is wait to see the champion and then just kind of go back and look at the bracket.
I think what we'll do as well is I think we should pick, or we're going to try to do it next week again. I'm not certain the format this is going to be released in. So if they give us the brackets and they link to match, because what they could do is they could do it on Flow Arena, which would be great because then Flow Arena has a pretty good interface. You can go back, you can look at all the brackets, you can click to the match footage from each matchup in the bracket. So there's a matchup I want to see because I assume there's going to be big guys against big guys in a couple of these brackets, even in the preliminaries, like first round, second round, that somebody's going to knock someone out.
It's true. Maybe actually what we do is we just look at like semifinals or something for each of the classes.
I think we should do that. Yeah. Semifinals and then finals. But also there's definitely some matches that I want to touch on, like, oh shit, this guy versus this guy.
Yep.
in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like I think there's definitely, we'll touch on some highlight matches, but again, given how many matches they're going to be, it may be, I think the technical term is a clusterfuck to cover. So we're going to try. So if you have a better way you think we should cover it, let us know. So on to our preview of Fight to Win 92 in Denver, Colorado. This event takes place on November 3rd and is headlined by a main event 175-pound black belt gi match, Isaiah Wright versus Bill the Grill Cooper. Dude, I love watching Bill compete.
Yeah, he's all over the place. It's awesome.
Dude, he goes both ways. He either has a match that's super dynamic with super weird grips, or he goes against like a dude like Wagner who's like, cool, I'm not going to let you move at all.
Yeah.
And so like hopefully versus Wright, we'll see him. It's a no-gi match. It's not a gi match.
Sweet.
I read that wrong. Dude, he's dynamic in no-gi. He grabs him and Glover. Both grab really weird grips from really weird positions, and I always have a lot of fun talking about his matches on the show because of just the dynamic.
How unconventional they are, yeah.
But they're so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like we talked about it, I think, last time we covered Bill or Jeff. I think it was Bill. About usually you see guys that play that kind of game, they can never kind of crack that upper echelon. And he's been able to do it with that weird, like, unorthodox game. And it's so cool to see guys that can make it work. Whenever I teach my students, I always talk about you know, they ask about something or ask about this move. Like, yeah, it's low percentage, but don't let that ever stop you from, like, trying something because it's only low percentage until you have a guy that's an absolute murderer with it. It's like, I'm never going to tell a guy to X choke from mount unless you're Hodger. I'm never going to have a guy, like, play a super heavy butterfly game all the time unless you're a guy like Wodzinski. Like, sell it on the guillotine unless you're Marcelo. Like, there are guys that are they've made that their game, and it's always really exciting to watch those guys, and Cooper's one of those guys. The co-main event is a black belt heavyweight gi match between Adam Wheeler and Stephen Hall. I think it's Stephen. I don't think it's Stephen Hall. What do you think of that?
You would know. I'm not sure.
You would know. No, I would not, Emil. That is far too much.
But you would guess is what I should say. So the next match is Gabe Bupertui versus Foster Bailey.
Oh, shit. James 300 Foster.
That's right.
So
this is a heavyweight black belt no-gi match.
That's exciting.
A 200-pound black belt no-gi match between Don Westman versus Jeff Ake from Easton BJJ. We have a 175-pound black belt no-gi match by Phil Lights versus Alvin Robinson. We have a 165-pound black belt no-gi match featuring Tim Galuzzi versus Nick Marr. We have a 150-pound black belt no-gi match the lore, Caballero versus Howie Spratt. We have a welterweight brown belt Masters Gi title fight, Dan Humpke versus Daniel Villeneuve.
Is it Villeneuve or Villeneuve?
It's the last Mike Villeneuve wanted it pronounced that way. So I don't know if this is the same Villeneuve.
So it might
or
be, it could be Villeneuve or it could be Villeneuve.
That's right.
All
right.
So we'll find out on November 3rd how that gentleman pronounces his name. So after that, we have a featherweight purple belt no-gi title, Mo Black versus Crystal Demopoulos. And under that, we have a featherweight female teen no-gi title, Jaden Mueller versus Emily Fernandez. After that, we got a host of brown belt matches and a host of purple belt matches. And then we have a couple no-gi matches for teens and kids. Super exciting, man.
Yeah,
I love watching these. So we have a stacked week of jiu-jitsu. So your week's been good, Emil?
Yeah, week has been great. Really loved commentating at SAGC.
You got anything else on the docket for this week? Other than watching hella ADCC trials?
That's right. I'm going to be living and breathing those things. So, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I got nothing else going on. I got to go teach in about 20 minutes.
I'm
covering a class at 8 p.m. and we're recording on Monday as per usual. So it's like, I can do them both.
Yeah. Have it all, man.
I mean, not really, man. I would like to take a nap at some point in the next 3 days, but that's not going to happen. But I got a couple weeks off after this, so I'm hoping to go to a bunch of different places and train. I want to get up to Philly and train. There's a couple places I want to train up there. I want to get up to even higher in PA and train. I want to go down to like Virginia and train a couple places and DC. I've already stacked my vacation with stuff that I want to do, so I'm kind of defeating the purpose of the vacation, I think.
Hey, as long as it's stuff you want to do, that's all that matters.
It is stuff I want to do, so I'm super excited. Hopefully, it'll give me time to cover the trials a little better, but we will see.
Yeah.
So you got anything else you want to talk about, Emil?
That's it.
All right. I've been Maine.
I've been Emil.
And we are the Grappling Rewind Podcast. We'll see you on the mats. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google Plus.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.